is LI in the AM with Jay Oliver. News, traffic, weather, and more. 1039 LI News Radio.
And we are back at 6:48. What do you say? It's not too early to do a spotlight segment, is it? It's called the Spotlight Segment on Long Island. We have spoken to her several times on the phone, and we certainly embrace her being in the studio with us. She's running for county executive in Nassau County. Her name is Laura Curran, and we say a very good morning. Finally, great to meet you in person.
It's fabulous to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
How about this? At MacArthur Airport, I know it's the hustle bustle. You got people flying everywhere off the planes right now. You got a beautiful sunrise as I look out the window. Can you
gorgeous,
believe this
stunning
scene here at MacArthur right now?
It's all happening here.
Unbelievable. It's happening with you, right? You got to get,
yeah,
4 weeks from yesterday?
4 weeks from yesterday, 27 days.
Can you believe it?
No, I can't.
What's your thoughts?
It's exciting, I have to say. You know, you jump into these things, you don't quite know how they're going to go, but the message is resonating and the momentum is building, and I feel that people are getting excited about this candidacy.
Now, for those who don't know Laura Curran, she's a legislator in the 5th District, which is... And she's out of Baldwin.
That's right.
But you cover the areas of like Oceanside and Hempstead, some of the Freeport area, right?
Freeport, Rockville Center, a little Merrick in my district. So it's a real South Shore district.
There you go. Big South Shore district. You know, I can't help but look at this while you're in here. You have the paper as well.
Yeah.
Regarding the Isles all in on Belmont. You,
yes.
You and I have spoken about the Islanders before, and John Ledecky is one of the owners.
I think he's made it pretty clear how he feels. Yeah. I mean, I have been praying and trying to lure them.
Any conversations with these guys? It's tough, though, right?
They're hesitant to talk too much, especially while they were preparing this RFP.
They're very quiet, these two owners.
They are. And, you know, I thought we had to make the case to John Ledecky and Scott Malkin. They were the two people we had to convince.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it sounds to me like they're not interested in,
wow,
in the Coliseum.
So many people are so disappointed because...
I woke up with a little bit of a broken heart, I
yeah,
have to tell you.
And it's interesting because, you know, the Islanders have, obviously they have a pretty good team, right? And a growing team, couple of great players, Tavares and company. Who knows if John Tavares will sign a contract now?
Well,
because
we need
that's all on where the Isles are going.
We
but,
need him.
I've been in the new Coliseum. It's a wonderful building.
It's beautiful.
You just wish they would have added the luxury boxes and a few more seats.
See, the thing I kept saying is the people who redid it are in the redesign business, in the renovation business. They could, if the Islanders really wanted to come, have accommodated hockey. I just don't know if there was a will from the team.
Yeah. No.
Those are the only two, you know, that's the only vote that matters, those two guys.
And I've taken the train into Brooklyn at the Barclays. It's not such a bad ride if you like 7-hour journeys to and from. That includes the game, by the way.
Probably beats driving.
So, you know, for 7:05, yeah, that's true. For a 7:05 game, you would have to pretty much hop on a 12 noon train and get to Brooklyn 1:30, and I don't know. Maybe that's a little too early. But you
and
know
then
what I'm
fight
saying.
The fans coming back
fight
on the
fans.
Train.
You get home at midnight. That's
yeah,
the bottom line.
Right.
To live
on
out
a
here,
weeknight, forget it.
In any event, I guess it's better a Belmont than Brooklyn. That's
we'll see
story.
What the state chooses. There are three hats in the ring. They're all intriguing in their own way.
Yeah.
And, of course, you have to engage whatever is going to happen. You have to engage the community early. The community in Elmont is vocal, and they know what they want, and you got to get buy-in from them.
Yeah, no question about
it. It's key.
Getting buy-in from the constituency these days? What's happening? What's the reaction to Laura Curran?
The reaction is very good. People are fed up with the culture of corruption. They're fed up
with... Is there corruption in Nassau?
Well, I don't know if you've heard, but there's been a little in the news.
I heard
about
something regarding Mangano. I don't know.
Mangano, Skelos,
some
Bendito.
Guy named Singh. I don't know.
Singh, right.
But there is. That's the biggest problem that plagues a lot of people, right?
It is. And if we're talking about restoring trust in government to do economic development, to have mixed use, to do the housing options that we've talked about, you've got to restore trust in government or you won't get the buy-in. It's got to happen. And I really believe we're in a great position right now to rebrand Nassau as a great place to do business, as a great place to live. I mean, we've got a lot going for us.
Yeah.
Between the schools, the universities, we're right by the city, wonderful communities, beautiful housing stock, the beaches, the parks.
It's a great place.
Right. But we just don't have a government right now that lives up to us.
It's a tough deal. Everybody
yeah,
talks two things, A, the taxes, and B, you know, the corruption.
And they're linked because you pay for that corruption. You pay for those no-show jobs.
Absolutely.
You pay for those bloated
contracts.
It's
got to come out of somebody's pocket, basically.
That's
and that's
right,
what's happened there, no question. And, you know, we talk a lot, Laura, regarding, you know, these elections, whether it be the primary or the GE and the apathy and everything else, and people always head back to the notion of what's the difference with my vote? It's the same old stuff as far as what's going to happen, you know, but there's corruption and everything. You look at the state. You look at Shelley Silver.
Right.
You look at the Dave Denenberg situation.
Frankly, it's both sides
Pete
of the
Skelos.
Aisle. Yeah, it's the culture. It's the culture of the place, and it's gone on too long. The thing that's interesting, though, it's hard with everything that's going on with Trump and Washington, and there's all this other news and the 24-hour news cycle. It's hard to break through that sometimes, to break through the clutter and to let people know, look, there is a really important election here. There's a lot at stake.
There is.
And your voice matters. No Don't question. Stay home. And I always joke, I mean, it's a half joke, I say, don't complain if you don't vote. And if you vote for me, if you vote for the other guy, just get out and vote. Whoever wins will be more accountable.
It's the most important thing you could do. There's no question about it. It's your right to vote. We say that all the time here, no matter what, because you're right, 100%. We say it all the time. You have no business to complain if you don't head to the polls. But that's the biggest thing, the apathy issue there. And, of course, you know, when the Skelos thing came down, the overturning of the conviction and everything else, that was just the straw that broke the camel right there.
Right. It was overturned on a technicality. And the judge,
statute of Bob McDonough.
Right.
Way back.
That's
The governor of Virginia. You
the
know.
Judge said, however, in this Skelos case, there was enough evidence to convict, but it was overturned on that technicality, and it's going to go back to trial. So we have to go through all of that again.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the whole thing of, you know, what is an act, overall act of whatever, you know, as far as the operations of an office are concerned, and still, you know, who knows? I mean, maybe there's a light at the silver lining in the Mangano situation. Well, I tell you, champagne's corks were open that night in that household. I'll tell you that much, but that's a whole nother story.
Yeah.
So in essence, you know, speaking of the county exec, and I think I've asked you this before, but just for the folks who are tuning in now, you know, you have a guy who's obviously heading out, and he's certainly under the scope a little bit from, you know, charges and whatnot that could be coming his way. But in essence, is it tough to follow that type of mode, that feel, as far as the county is concerned, where you have some unrest with the leader and everything else, and then you have, you know, a couple of new people coming in. Is it better to kind of come in with a slate that will be completely clean?
Right.
With the hope that, you know what, Mangano did his thing for several terms. And
right.
We have a new regime coming in. Is that the mindset kind of that you want to portray?
I think we've got to be really serious and show voters, show residents that we're going to hire people based on what they know and not who they know.
Yeah.
And to make sure that there's no question as to why they're being hired with your money. So I won't allow anyone that I appoint to have a leadership in a party, because in a political party, and I won't allow anyone that I hire to contribute to any of my campaigns or to raise money for my campaigns, so that there is no question why they are there. I mean, we have some serious problems. We need strong managers who can really manage their departments, really manage their budgets, if we want to get out of this mess.
And speaking of budgets, you know, one to go right through, who knows, at the end of October, is it? Is it right before the election? You have a near $3 billion budget.
That's right.
And a lot of people will say, same thing happening in Suffolk County, you know, regarding, you know, closing loopholes and everything else, you know, $130 million deficits going on here. Is there a way to really close those loops and get the county back on the right track? You know, we know about the tickets and the fees on top of the tickets,
right,
the surcharges, that everything else that wants to be put in play here. But is there a way to kind of, you know, kind of calm the storm a little bit as far as all that's concerned?
I think there is. I think there is a real way to balance the budget. For instance, currently we spend millions and millions of dollars on outside contracts, often to politically connected firms. We can bring a lot of that work in-house and save money immediately. Also, for things that we do have to contract out, we need stronger management of how they're being managed, of how those contracts are being done. That has not happened under this administration.
Right.
I mean, I'll give you the one example about Armor Healthcare, which did the private
health
care at the jail.
We're going to talk a lot about that on the other side.
Yeah. So that was outsourced to a private vendor, but the county was not making sure that the contractor, that the company, met very, very particular metrics that were in the contract. You know, very simple things that they were supposed to do, they weren't doing, but yet they were being paid. Fast forward, $60 million later, the attorney general launched an investigation, and they had to go because they were doing a terrible job.
Yeah, that Armor Correctional, that's a disgrace.
That
what has happened
there?
The inmate deaths and everything else, the back and forth,
and just the lack of accountability.
Yeah. I mean, Nassau University Medical Center, and then the contract I thought was outrageous to keep them going there. And I just thought it was just egregiously done in such
a way. It's just symbolic of how it seemed that no one was minding the
exactly,
store.
Exactly. So that is a big issue. Is there anything that can be done as far as, you know, if you head to this post, as far as maybe...
One other thing I'm looking at, the county owns a lot of real estate. There are a lot of parcels and slivers. We need to do a real inventory of what we own and then sell off or get rid of what we don't need. Gets rid of liability and it gets rid of our responsibility. We also need to make sure that every penny that you give us, right? We're in the customer service business. That every penny that you give us is being spent appropriately, is being spent on services that you expect from your local government. We also have to look seriously at the... How do we grow the tax base, right? So 40% of our budget, of our revenue that we get is through sales tax. Most people think it's property tax is the majority. Property tax is about 27%.
Sales tax is so important.
Sales tax is 40%. So we need to have an open arm policy to business, to growing the tax base, to making it easier for businesses to work through the permits and the license and the registration, all of that they have to do between the towns, the villages, and the county. And also create a vision of how we do true economic development. I'm a big fan of transit-oriented development, building around our train stations, mixed-use, housing, retail, et cetera, to really grow the tax base. Yeah. We'll also keep our young people and our empty nesters. We don't want to lose them.
Right.
We've lost too many of them.
Way too many. That's a big issue out in Suffolk as well. We're going to do more as far as conversation. Laura Curran is here running for the Nassau County Executives, but very coveted position, we said. And you know, listen, non-federal year, this is one of the more important elections you will ever find across the island. A lot of play and a lot of talk and a lot of endorsements, and everything's looking good for you. Handled George Maragos in fine fashion.
Yes.
In a bit of a primary.
That's where you and I first got to know each other, through the primary.
Absolutely.
And I, you know, you mentioned endorsements. I'm very proud to have been endorsed by Governor Cuomo, Congresswoman Rice. 46 unions have endorsed my candidacy.
That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
That's pretty good, dude.
Right, I'm very proud of
you. You got a lot of momentum and everything.
I do, and I find the message is resonating in all different kinds of neighborhoods. You know, we're such a community of communities in Nassau, each with its distinct personality, sometimes its own accent, you know, its own issues. But there is a common denominator that I'm finding as I'm traveling around campaigning, and that is a feeling of deep distrust. And it's no wonder. You just pick up the paper. Well, I mean, I'm sure your listeners know very well.
Sure.
You know what's going on, and you know why there is distrust. And that's why I'm in this race.
No question about it. And, you know, it seems to me like today's elections in this day and age are so tougher for candidates to overcome that stigma, because you really have to have that confidence conveyed to the constituency.
Right.
You know, what you are about and what you intend to accomplish. It's tough, though, for trust to be involved here.
It
after
is.
Everything that's been going, especially in Nassau, where you have a county executive who's certainly been at the helm of all this stuff.
Right. I find the fact that I'm not a career politician, that I have a background as a newspaper reporter.
Give me a little of the current file, as I always say. Give me a little background as you kind of
so
got into this.
So when I was a little girl, I never dreamed of running for office. I wasn't thinking, I really want to be a politician when I grow up. I was a newspaper reporter for many years, and I got into public service through my kids, actually. I have kids in the public schools where I live, and I wanted to do what I could to help the school succeed, so I ran for the school board. And actually, that wasn't a race I was supposed to win because there was an incumbent there. But I got the voters lists from the previous year and got a group of friends together. We knocked on a bunch of doors, and I ended up doing really well. And I loved it. I love the policy. I love dealing with the budget. I love dealing with angry people in the grocery store.
And that invigorated you to go into other areas.
Yeah, and it sparked my interest to step up and serve my community in a bigger way. So I had the opportunity to run for legislator. And I've loved being a legislator. I love, I've been able to get stuff done for the people that I represent, reaching across the aisle sometimes when necessary.
Now, you've been a legislator, what, since 14, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Almost 4 years. At the end of this year, it will be 4 years.
Right.
So I'm very proud of what I've accomplished on the legislature, but it's also been incredibly frustrating because I feel like I've had a front row seat, sort of an insider's view as to what really goes on. And I know who lives in our communities. I know how hard people work. I know what high taxes they pay. And I know the frustration that people feel, because I feel it too, that we just don't have a government that lives up to us. The machine system is not working for the people anymore.
People know it.
And it doesn't matter whether they're Republican or Democrat, liberal or conservative. It's beyond that. at this point.
So in essence, as a legislator, you can make the case that it's really kind of helped you see the entire field, so to speak,
exactly.
as you are running now for the county exec spot, because you know what the legislature has been going through.
Intimately. And I know the departments in the government very well. I know what's working, and I know what's not working.
No question. Is NIFA working, the NASA Interim Finance Authority?
So, as you know, NIFA has been there for 17 years because the county was mismanaging its money.
They oversee
terribly.
The finances and everything else.
So we got a bailout from the state, and we have this control board there overseeing our budget, overseeing our contracts, et cetera, until all those bonds are paid back. The county still owes about $800 million. So NIFA will be there for about another 8 years. However, the problem is that now, I mean, that as if that's not a problem enough,
right.
is that NIFA is under a, we're under a control period of NIFA. So it's like being under a control period by a control board because of the mismanagement and because of the budget is so skewed, you know, deficits, debt, et cetera. And, you know, you talk about restoring trust in government. You've also got to restore trust with this oversight authority. Because for years, this administration has said that we have multi-million dollar budget surpluses, when actually what we've got are deficits. Those, quote, surpluses is money that the county has borrowed but not spent. And anyone knows that's not a true surplus. So we've got to be straight with our budgeting and, you know, go through everything in the budget, line by line, making sure every penny is being spent appropriately.
And of course, you know, as we mentioned, NIFA oversees the county finances, and they have made recommendations in the past as far as, you know what, you got to trim this and trim this. You got to be at a certain number here. And sometimes, you know, it's tough to comply, right, with all that stuff. It's still, it's their recommendation.
Sometimes they make recommendations. There was a report done recently by a third party that they contracted out that made some very draconian recommendations, things that I think would be reckless, and things that would also make us change the charter, which is change state law, which would be very difficult to do, like getting rid of the Office of Minority Affairs, for instance, or getting rid of the youth programs, which I think would be penny wise and pound foolish. Some draconian things that I do not agree with. However, that being said, we've got to look at everything. One thing that I'm very concerned about is the union contracts, the municipal unions, will be up at the end of the year, so it will be the next county executive who negotiates them. We've got to make sure that we negotiate them fairly to make sure that our workers make a decent wage and also that the taxpayers are getting their money's worth.
And that's something that this county executive here in Suffolk, you know, it's a tough job, and you have the Suffolk County Association of Municipal Employees, the largest independent union in the county, the state, still working without a contract, and it's a tough deal. These are the folks who make the county run.
That's right.
You know, I mean, these are your crossing guards and your health care officials and construction
the
guys.
The people who fill the potholes
and
make sure our streets are safe, make sure the sewage is running. You know, things that you shouldn't have to think about, public safety, sewage, good roads. These are the people who do the actual work.
Exactly. We're talking with Laura Curran. She's running for county exec in Nassau. Now, you mentioned you have some kids.
I do. I've got three girls.
Three girls. Are they young?
9, 12, and 17.
So they are right in the ages of schools and everything else. And, you know, when I think of the schools and young kids, you know, I think of our everyday type problems. You know, we have big problems here with the drugs and the gangs. And again, if you get to that post, something you'll be dealing with as well, right? It's a tough situation.
Absolutely.
And the school's very important as far as setting that path the right way.
It's true. And you talk about drugs and gangs. I mean, those are two things that are very top of mind, obviously, as someone who's in public service and as a parent. The opioid crisis is mushrooming. It's hitting all of our communities really hard. The sickness of addiction is devastating so many of our families and so many of our communities. And on the county level, this is something that we need to attack with three prongs. We need to do work on prevention, education. There's some wonderful curricula in our schools. There's one that's called Too Good for Drugs that reaches kids as young as fifth grade to teach them to make the right kinds of choices. And as a legislator, I've had workshops for parents about what to look for, warning signs, what they can do if they if they're concerned. We've also got to take a serious look at prevention. So as it is now, if you're treated with Narcan, if you're overdosing and a family member or a police officer or firefighter comes and rescues you with Narcan, you stop overdosing immediately, but then you can just go right on back to using. There's no treatment mandated in the middle there, which I really believe there should be.
Yeah.
And of course, we've got to take a hard look at enforcement and to give our cops the resources they need to fight this scourge and make sure that they're proper, that our force is properly staffed.
No doubt
to
about
handle
it.
This.
So basically, you know, put it into the curriculum as far as these schools are concerned.
You know, I don't think you can start young enough without, obviously without scaring kids, but teach them how to make the right kinds of choices, yeah. how to be confident, how to be self-reliant so that they don't fall victim to this very seductive chemical. I mean, you can be on something like Vicodin for 2 weeks, according to doctor's orders, and you're an addict. That's how quickly the brain chemistry changes.
No question. And of course, so much conversation regarding the gang stuff, especially in the last 6 months. We've seen congressional panels out here in Suffolk County led by Peter King. We have seen the attorney general here out in Central Islip.
That's
right. We've seen the police commissioner head down for congressional hearings. You know, this is an ongoing, and it's a problem in both counties. We know
it
the Massapequa Preserve, where you had that body in March, fourth person arrested just a few weeks ago. By the way, your DA is doing a great job. We've had Madeline Singus on this program many a time, and
she's
great.
Continues
to fight, right?
She's no joke.
You get along with her, right?
Yeah. I have a lot of respect for her.
I think she does a great job.
Yeah.
But, you know, the gangs, big problem. Hempstead, Freeport area, your district.
It is. Sometimes people in Nassau, because they see in the news in Suffolk, they think, oh, it's a Suffolk problem. It's not true. We have a problem in Nassau as well. One thing that I'm very concerned about is what's always on the chopping block on the county budget. Because it's discretionary, there are a few things that are actually discretionary, are our youth programs. So this is things like homework help, gang prevention, help with runaways, you know, help for kids who are confused about gender identity or whatever it is. These programs are so important because they help kids, no matter what their zip code is, no matter what their school district is, help them to grow up to be confident and self-reliant and therefore less able to be preyed upon by these gangs. We've got to make sure that these programs are funded. Not only is it the right thing to do, it will save money. The little bit of money that you spend on these will save money down the road on incarceration costs, on public safety costs. And again, with enforcement, we have to make sure that our cops have the tools that they need and be able to talk to anyone they need in the federal government to make sure that they're doing, that they have the ability to clamp down on these gangs and to do the kinds of investigations and forge those kind of partnerships to really nip this in the bud.
And you know, it's interesting because we have the laws in place. They just have to be enacted. You know, we have Kate's Law and everything else and sharing names on the registry. The individual, the fourth individual that was picked up just last week who showed his signs in and around his body regarding who he was from. In essence, this was a guy who was deported and came back.
Right.
And these are big-time issues as far as handling, and that comes from a federal level in a big way.
Absolutely. So we need to make sure that our cops have the ability to partner with whomever they need to partner. At the same time, it's really important to build trust between police and community. And the Nassau County Police Department currently has a policy on the books, which I think is an excellent policy. And that is if you're the victim, witness, or you have information about a crime, that your immigration status is irrelevant. Because if you're the victim of domestic violence or you have information about a gang member next door, but you're afraid to talk to the cops about it, what's going to happen? The problem's going to get worse. Communities will become less safe, and the job will become tougher for the police as well.
If you're just tuning in, we are talking in studio with Laura Curran. She is running for the Nassau County Executive's post. Whole new regime going in. I'll tell you, big races all across Long Island. Legislators changing.
Yes, in both counties,
you've
got a hot
right?
DA race heating up in Suffolk.
Absolutely. You got the sheriff's race out here.
Right.
You got supervisors left and right.
That's right. A lot of opportunity to put in some really good people who will manage your money well and be held accountable.
Speaking of supervisors, you got a back and forth going there between Anthony Santino.
Oh, yes.
And Peter King. I mean, that's
Isn't
a grudge
that
match
interesting?
Right there.
Yes.
And a lot of back and forth there regarding...
Yeah, it's fun for us inside baseball political people.
Regarding ethics and everything else, which has also been a very big topic, especially if your opponent and everything else.
That's right. Ethics seems to be, it's the topic that everybody's talking about. And according to all the polls that I've seen, the number one issue right now is corruption. Even more than taxes. And of course, I make the connection that you pay for the corruption through your taxes.
And a lot of people want the T word accentuated even more, and that is transparency.
Mm.
I think transparency myself is the key to the future.
I agree with you 1,000%.
Because people are tired of being in the dark and being blindsided.
Right.
They want to see it out up front and up close.
People are not stupid.
Right.
And now
they know now more than ever.
They know. And I'm talking to Republicans, I'm talking to Democrats, and they all feel the same way. That's the interesting part, whether you're in Massapequa or Elmont. It's the same conversations that I'm having. Transparency is key. And with technology now, everyone can get access to information. Government should be exactly the same. Every check that we write to a vendor, to a contractor, can and should go online. It doesn't cost a lot of money. Even if people don't go and look it up, at least they'll know that it's there.
Right.
And that will hold everyone in government much more accountable.
And so much has been made regarding Albany these days, and in that ethics category, as far as putting together a comprehensive ethics.
Well, when you have a situation where more Albany politicians leave in handcuffs because of an arrest than they do because they're voted out, you know we have a problem.
We got a big problem.
That's why I'm also a big fan of term limits.
Yeah.
Sometimes when these guys get in office, they're there for 20, 30 years.
Too much.
They lose touch. Right. They lose touch with their constituents. It's almost like they lose touch with reality.
Yeah, there's no question
about
it.
And get a real sense of entitlement.
Yeah. And you know, they've hit a couple of points here and there, you know, as far as pensions and whatnot, and campaign donations. But they really have to put together the whole package.
Right.
Before they end session. I always felt that way. And we talked about
it. Isn't that funny that that's the one thing they don't do every year?
Exactly. No question about it. Talk to me a little bit, because it's a hot topic here these days, and that's these red light cameras.
Mm.
You know, and listen, we've got deficits in both counties. How do you close the gap? The cameras in Suffolk bring in about 31, 32.
You don't like red light cameras?
I'm not a big fan. I've gotten a few myself. I can't understand
so
why
I've
gotten them.
Me,
you know,
too.
You make the right on the red, you pause. And I tell you, I was on Route 110 yesterday, making the right onto the expressway. I've gotten 3 tickets for that. And the light is red, and I'm staying until it's green now. I'm not making that
I don't
right.
make right on red either. I've got 2 making a right on red. I thought I counted to 5. I guess
you
I counted.
Know, right?
I didn't do the
you
Mississippi
off a second,
in the
and
middle.
You get the $80 ticket in the mail.
Yeah.
But in essence, you a fan? Should... They're doing a big study out here now, $250,000 they're spending. Are you a fan of it? Do you think it should still be ongoing? More studies may be needed? What's your feeling on red light?
One thing that's interesting is that red light cameras that have been up for a long time, there are fewer tickets being given out at those locations because people are getting the message, and they are driving more safely.
Well, the rear-end collisions, though, seem to be on the rise a little bit here.
I've heard that. That's true, and that's something that we should really look at. To me, if someone runs a red light, if they do it unsafely, yes, there should be a penalty for that. However, we have to make sure that it's being done fairly and appropriately and consistently throughout the county.
Consistency is the key, because I've always said, you know what? You want to do a study, do it right, but make them uniform when you roll it out. You can't have one intersection where you're, you know, changing yellow to red in 3 seconds, and then the other one is 5 seconds or 6. You know what I'm saying? There seems to be a discrepancy as far as the changeover. That was always my biggest...
That's what I've heard. I've talked to our safety guys, our traffic light guys. They say that's not the case, but we should do a study to make sure that's the case. The other thing I'm concerned about is in the current budget that we will be voting on in a couple of weeks, adds an extra fee to the red light cameras. An extra $55, which is basically another tax. If you take all of the fees that are in this budget and combine them, whether it's the mortgage recording, the moving violations, et cetera, if you combine them all, that is more, way more, probably 3 times as much as what the tax cap would be. So really, essentially, it's a tax.
Yeah.
And I think it's completely unfair.
No doubt. We have a fellow by the name of Rob Trotta on with us periodically. He happens to be a legislator here in Suffolk County in the 13th District. And... that's his thing. It's not a fee. It's a tax.
Right.
So the
fee is supposed to be cover the cost of doing
government.
It should
be made as far as a profit, right?
Right.
Pretty
it's
much.
Supposed to cover what it is that you're trying to do.
Yeah, exactly. So it's we do a little tongue-in-cheek with Rob all the time because we get him going with these red light deals.
And he gets all hot under the collar.
I mean, never a dull moment. But in essence, you know, it's fees, it's taxes on top of tax. People are tired of that. Speaking of taxes, property taxes loom large. We know it. We live in a tough county here. We had on PSEG the head yesterday in Dan Eichhorn. And, you know, rates trying to be held at a certain point. But taxes certainly are key in both areas, both counties. Is there a way to really lower price? I mean, we get the question asked all the time. We talk
Everybody
with people
does.
And everything else. And that's one of the like, top three property taxes because it's all about affordability. And they seem to be on the rise. And how do you regulate it?
It's such a concern. You know, you think about, I think about my neighbors who are on a fixed income, yeah. older people, younger people who are looking to relocate. They might not want to come here because of the taxes. It's like paying another mortgage payment every month. So what do? We have to make sure that we manage your money appropriately, that we spend it transparently, that we spend it ethically, that we hire people based on what they know, not who they know, and that we're not giving out sweetheart contracts. Get rid of the corruption tax. We also have to think seriously about how can we have so many taxing entities. We've got about 250 taxing entities in Nassau alone between towns, villages, school districts, fire districts, et cetera. So we need to take a serious look about how we can share services. Everyone likes local control. I don't think that's going anywhere anytime soon. So we've got to make sure that we engage all of these taxing entities to see if they can do purchasing together, if school districts can, you know, contract busing together. That's something that we did on my local school board, working with other districts to save taxpayer money.
Yeah.
We've also got to look at how do we grow the tax base. Right? Because we're dependent on, obviously, on this tax base to run the government, but we can't keep taxing people to death. We're gonna continue to wither if that happens. So how do we grow the tax base? To me, it's the key is starting with a wide range of housing options. Not everyone wants the single family house anymore. So in places where it makes sense, in communities that want it, have mixed use development. Places where millennials are coming, I mean, you and I have discussed this. They're coming to Patchogue. They're coming to Farmingdale. They're coming to Rockville Center. They're
yep.
coming to Mineola, if they can afford it, because there is a wider range of housing options. And I would not discount the fun factor. Why are they going to Brooklyn? Why are they going to Austin, Texas? Because these places are fun. And gone are the days when I was younger, people would go to the city where the business was. They would go to the
right,
job.
Right.
Now they go to the place that's cool, that's fun, where they want to live. The businesses follow them.
No doubt.
So then you bring business, you bring jobs, and grow the tax base, which is, if we don't have a vision for doing that, that we can get buy-in from our towns, from our villages, from all of our constituents, I'm concerned we will continue to wither and we won't live up to our potential. And that would be such a tragedy.
No question. In fact, I was in Farmingdale yesterday, and I remember taking the train a few weeks ago and passing Farmingdale, and I noticed how it was really built up beautifully with some of the new buildings, the apartments, and everything
it's
else.
It's gorgeous.
Main Street looks
it's
revitalized,
hopping.
Right?
It's bumping, yeah.
So, and I used to work in that area many years ago.
You can't believe it's the same
I
place, right?
I cannot believe it. You know,
and that hasn't been that long ago.
Transformation is amazing.
I did a tour when I first became a legislator 4 years ago. I did a tour with the mayor there, Ralph Ekstrom. And it was just when the housing development was starting to be built. And there were some empty storefronts. And, you know, I was thinking, okay, let's see how it works. Fast forward 3-4 years later, you can't find a parking spot on a Saturday night. That's a good thing. That's
yeah.
a good problem
yeah.
to have.
Well, it's like Patchogue. You know, look at
Patchogue
now and what it was
what
10
years ago. What a renaissance. Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of the same thing. But, you know, there's been a few areas.
You know, and in both of those places, there was a strong mayor. Paul Pontieri in
Patchogue,
Ralph in Farmingdale.
Yep,
it takes a strong mayor with a real
good,
vision of how to do it.
Two examples, no question
yeah.
about it. You bring up the youth a lot, and you know we talk about you know companies staying put and keeping young people here. It's vital for the future of Long Island. Are you confident as far as some of these big companies staying put? You know, we talk a lot out here now with maybe Amazon. Who knows? Second headquarters. 50,000 jobs. Hey, you could dream, right? But
absolutely.
You know, you've got the Heartland Square project out here, the little Pilgrim Psych Center. You've got the Ronkonkoma Hub, which is a major situation
with the transit component, which is key.
Key, right?
Key.
And they've developed that here at the airport right now because you know they have the situations where folks can go right into the train station. But in essence, keeping those people here, keeping the millennials here, is key, I think, to the future of the island. And that means companies, they have to have a reason to stay here.
That's right. And I think all too often, government has made it too difficult for businesses, whether it's, you know, look at the hub. Sure, we've got a redone Coliseum, but it's surrounded by 77 acres of parking lot because politicians got in their own way. They fought because of party, because who's going to get the credit. And we're left with this dearth of tax revenue. So we've got to really create a vision. We've got to really brand Nassau County and make sure that it lives up to. We've got all the ingredients. We've got a lot going for us, but we just aren't living up to that potential right now. So it's going to take a lot of vision. It's going to take a lot of backbone. It's going to take a lot of diplomacy. But I know we can do it. And that's why I'm in this race. I'm really excited about the opportunities.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
You know, I moved to Long Island. I moved to Nassau County. I bounced around a lot as a kid.
Yeah.
And I came here, my husband and I, right before we started having kids, we bought a house because we really bought into the Long Island dream, the Nassau County dream. Great school, single family house, beaches, parks, the whole nine yards. And we knew that we would pay high taxes, but it was part of a deal that we were willing to make. But as a legislator and as a taxpayer, and I see how our money is being wasted and squandered on corruption, it's incredibly frustrating. And not just that, at the same time, we're not creating that vision of how we grow. And I don't want to get too deep into this, but I also wanted to talk about the IDA, the Industrial Development Agency in Nassau. I think could be made much more muscular, and we could make great deals to really attract business and attract development in a responsible way. Because when you're basically giving them a tax, you know, you're giving them a tax break, so that other taxpayers have to make up for it. So the other taxpayers are making an investment. And if their investment is not paying off in jobs and in economic development, then they should get that money back.
Speaking of the IDA, I mean, do you like the way it was handled as far as the Green Acres mall situation? Tax breaks?
That was a mess. That was not handled well at all.
It really had been botched, though.
Yeah. You know, and everyone's blaming, is it the school district? Is it the IDA? You know, the blame can go back and forth. But at the end of the day, the taxpayers were not served. When they see their taxes going up $700, $1,000, something broke down there. And we've got to make sure that does not happen again.
No question. You're listening to 103.9 LA News Radio. About in the hour here, of course. We're going to go just a couple more minutes as Laura heads back into Nassau. Really appreciate you coming out here.
It was a great field trip out here.
Fantastic stuff. But in essence, as you make the final rounds now, in the next couple of weeks, you know, there's a lot of back and forth and everything else. You're meeting a ton of people, right? And we talked about some of the main concerns and everything else. But this is such an important part. I think people are realizing now such an important time for a lot of people as they go into this new day and age because of what was left behind and what is present and hopefully going forward in the future. And you have a tough job. You know, you're creating this vision in which, you know, you're looking for change. You're trying to convey that point to the residents out in Nassau. And that's the biggest task right now, right? Because as we mentioned in the beginning of the conversation, you have an individual who might not have done the right thing. Time will tell. But in essence, it's really about changing the culture.
That's right.
Of thinking right now, I think. Am I correct in saying
you
that?
You are. You put it right on the head. Absolutely. It's about changing the culture, and it's about giving people something to believe in. After all of the cynicism, you know, the arrest, the indictments, there's really good reason to be cynical. Giving them a reason to feel optimistic. And I truly believe I am the candidate to do that. I think my opponent has been a career politician. He's run for many, many different offices. And when he had an opportunity to be a change agent, he declined. When his mentor, Dean Skelos, was arrested on federal corruption charges, he not only looked the other way, he did everything he could to keep him in a position of power, whether it was blocking a motion on the floor to bring the leadership to a vote. He did not bring it to a vote. He signed on to a letter saying that he'd done nothing wrong and he should stay in control, and even went so far as to go to a fancy fundraiser in New York City to support him. So I think that does not give him the credibility to really be the change agent that we need. I believe that he is more of the same, that he is a product of the same broken system that we have now.
Man, listen, you can certainly make that case. And before we let you go, you know, obviously what happens local, on a local level, we have to look a lot in the national stage. And, you know, you've got good congressmen, you know, as far as 2, 3, and 4, Peter King, Tom Suozzi, Kathleen Rice, you mentioned.
That's right.
Before,
and I'd love to see Peter King and Tom Suozzi co-author that op-ed in the paper, I think it was over the weekend, fighting against Trump's tax idea to make sure that we're taxed on what we're already taxed on, local and federal, local and state taxes. So, you know, we pay high property taxes.
Yeah.
We'll be taxed on that as well.
Yeah, no
question. According
to
this plan. The fact that we have King and Swazi partnering on that, I think we got some good advocates for us down in Washington.
And that was my question in regards to, you know, the national level, and we see what's happening with this president and a lot of situations left and right, but certainly tax reform, health care, big topics, tax reform affecting Long Island and New Yorkers in not so positive of ways.
That's right.
Based on what we read.
And the president's a New Yorker. You think he'd know, he'd think he'd understand us better.
Exactly. And you would think, but that's where, you know, our local officials really have to
that's
come
right.
into
we
play here.
That's right. We need strong advocates down in Washington. We need strong advocates in Albany. And frankly, we need strong advocates and pit bulls here in Nassau County.
Yeah. Very, very key stuff. So certainly a lot of back and forth. Can you believe all these storms left and right? I mean, you know, what's happening in Puerto Rico and everything else.
Yeah, I know.
Boy, I tell you.
It's troubling. And I was very concerned when the president, you know, we're talking about pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord, which, being on an island, we're very vulnerable to climate change. So I was heartened to see governors and mayors all over the country say they're going to stick with the accords where they have control. And I vowed as county executive I will do the same. We can keep those standards here in Nassau County. And the other thing that he decided to roll back a policy that mandates that infrastructure built with taxpayer money should withstand the ravages of climate change, whether it's flooding, rising sea levels, et cetera. He said, we don't need that anymore. I think if we're using your money to build infrastructure, it should withstand climate change. Absolutely. Otherwise, we'll end up paying more down the road. It's just irresponsible.
And listen, you can't discount the fact that these storms are becoming more fast and more furious.
And more frequent.
You know, and it's ravaging communities, in essence.
Sewer
district hookups, big problem. We know the deal out here, hundreds of millions of dollars. Water quality issues all attached and everything else. That's something Long Island hasn't seen in recent years, but it has come to the forefront now. It's a big problem.
Well, especially in Suffolk, the lack of sewage treatment plants is really hurting development and hurting economic development. In Nassau, we have a different kind of problem. We've got a lot of sewage treatment plants. However, we have a problem of nitrogen going into our water. There are some solutions that are in the works that I'm very excited about, because if we can begin to restore recreational use in our waterways, you know, also restore the marshland, which acts as a buffer against storm surge. We've got to do that. And there are some interesting things coming down the pike that I'm really excited to see through to help make that happen. Also, I think we can partner with Suffolk. We sort of have different sewage problems in Nassau and Suffolk, but we can partner, perhaps float a bond through the state to address both of our sewage problems. That will be good for also, you know, obviously making the water cleaner, healthier, the water underneath us that we drink and the water that surrounds us will also help with economic development.
There you go. It's been an absolute pleasure to meet you in person.
Absolute pleasure. I thank you so much.
Great to have you here, Laura Curran. Hopefully we'll have her back before the big day, which is November the 7th.
Invite me and I will come.
I mean, yes, there you go. Laura Curran.